reached a number that has been disconnected or is no longer in service. If you feel that you have reached this recording in error, please check the number and try your call again.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you after picking up the phone after a long time. Sorry about that, folks. Kyle's also here.
Hi.
Out in Skype land, Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
And Gila.
Good evening.
And Alex.
You do indeed.
Good evening. Okay, well, you know, Alex, comes to mind, we didn't mention this last week because we were so caught up in the, collapse of the country and all, that we didn't really get a chance to talk about the Super Bowl, but you were at the Super Bowl. And as a hacker, you know, we don't often get to experience things like that. So similarly to when people go to prison, which happens much more often, we have a hacker view of the inside of that institution. So you're a hacker that was on the inside of a different kind of institution. Is there anything you noticed or anything you want to share with the community?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, but, you know, this also is a comes part and parcel with the fact that, you know, I was there as a guest of the NFL, and I used to be the CISO at the NFL, the Chief Information Security Officer, so running all of the cybersecurity there. So I also have a different perspective on all of that, too. But I will also tell you that in terms of the stadium and the processes and the people that were working security at the Super Bowl, the NFL, was really extraordinary, I have to say, given that Trump was there at the same time that I was this past weekend in New Orleans. So that was really something else. And I think that changed the tenor and the caliber of the security around the perimeter there. I mean, one of the things you noticed right away, even just outside the city and far away from the Superdome, was that there was a massive amount of helicopters passing over New Orleans just constantly. It was obviously security related. There were security details. There were a lot of armed police over and around the street. And as you got closer and closer to the Superdome, it was even more of a police presence. But then one of the things that was actually quite interesting to see, and this was a change from the regular procedures, of course, at the NFL and within the Super Bowl, because President Trump was there, all of the physical security and the bag checks and things actually the Secret Service was performing all of those security checks. So that was really something to behold. One of the other things that's of note as well is that And this is not a new policy. This is an old policy. But whenever you're entering the Super Bowl, you're only allowed to carry with you items that fit within a bag of a certain size. And the bag has to be entirely see-through, entirely transparent. So all of the items that you're bringing into the stadium have to be viewable very easily by security so that they can pass people through right away. But other than that, I think it was, you know, pretty much an ordinary football game, other than the fact that it was entirely packed. Every seat was taken. And as we discussed, I don't know, maybe a couple of months ago on this program, when you guys had gone to a football game in New Jersey, I believe, was that there were these lights that you wear on your wrist, these kind of RFID activated lights. And what the NFL was able to do with all of those lights, knowing at which seat they're going to be located and activating them at certain times in a fully packed, massive stadium like we were in New Orleans, that was something to behold. That was pretty extraordinary to see those lights going off at certain times and spelling certain words and making certain characters and things like that, especially during the halftime show, together with other lights and pyrotechnics. It was very much a feat to behold.
Wow. Yeah, I can imagine it was probably something unusual, even for those people who have attended actual football games, you know, the halftime show alone. Just watching that be set up and torn down as quickly as it always is during those particular events. So that must have been something as well. But did you notice any other unusual things that, well, I guess, you know, it being a Super Bowl alone is cause for all kinds of extra security. But having the President of the United States there as well, that certainly would add to it an addition. But it sounds like it seemed fairly normal for that kind of a thing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and it's not like I go to a lot of football games, amazingly. And even though I was at the NFL, I managed to avoid ever attending a football game in my entire life, other than the Super Bowl. So this is my first game, first football game ever. I never went to a football game in high school, college. Yeah, I just was not really. It was very uninteresting to me. But having worked at the NFL, I have a newfound appreciation of the game in many respects. And one of the things that's just been fascinating to me is how many technological problems and cybersecurity problems can arise from a game with a bunch of really big dudes throwing around a ball. That's pretty interesting. And there's, sorry.
Do you have to do the show with your dog in the same room?
Yeah, sorry about that. My children are returning home, so the beagle is freaking out here. So she's making her own appearance tonight on WBAI, apparently.
All right. So anyway, glad you were able to do that. Just one final question, though, because this has been brought up numerous times in MAGA land about how out of touch the halftime show was with mainstream America, how Kendrick Lamar simply did not resonate. Was that true in the stands? Were people confused or alienated or even scared of all this woke propaganda coming their way?
Well, I'll tell you this. I was just kind of confused being in the stands and watching the halftime show. It was very interesting to watch. It was neat. It was a lot of fancy moves and things, but it was definitely a halftime show that was designed not necessarily for the stadium audience, but primarily for the television audience, because you really needed to see the various angles from which they were filming the halftime show, I think, to understand the import of what they were doing and the moves and the lyrics. From the vantage of being in the stadium, and I'm happy to say that our seats were pretty damn good. We were right in one of the end zones. I think we actually probably had a better view of the players than President Trump did, quite frankly. But from our perspective, the halftime show was actually pretty small relative to the size of the field. It was difficult to figure out exactly what was going on, so we were just a little bit mystified by it. I would say I could surmise that there was some kind of woke aspect to it, but that there was some kind of commentary about America and current status of America at that time, but I couldn't figure out exactly what it was. What we did see, however, quite clearly at the halftime show was one of the dancers for Kendrick Lamar, who had unfurled the Palestinian flag, a flag in support of Sudan and Gaza, and then he was escorted off the field and arrested. I think he was actually arrested right on the field.
I know he wasn't, charged in the end, but I know he was tackled by some people in suits, which must have been an odd thing to see. And that's something also that did not appear on TV. The cameras missed that.
That's correct.
Or avoided that. But what you described as being somewhat perplexed by what was going on in the field, that also applies to the game, because the game is meant for the TV audience. You guys are there for the background. But the game and the halftime show, it's for the bigger audience out there. And if you are able to see some of it and get some of it, all the better. But it's normal not to be able to understand everything that's going on.
Yeah, that's a great point, too, because it's very hard to see exactly what's happening there. You're there in the audience for the energy, for the support, to be around other fans, to see the players in action. And it's quite interesting too to see how small a football field is. When you look at it on, when you watch it on television, you see it just looks like it's never ending, right? And that's because of the perspective. But to actually watch a football game and figure out what's going on, what the players are doing, understand the strategy of every single play on the field, it's a hell of a lot better, I think, to just watch that from home than to be within a stadium.
If you want to know what's going on in the game, what I do, you know, when I go to mass sporting events occasionally, I try to watch all the things that aren't on camera, the things in the background, the camera people, the sound people, the security people. I just want to see all the things that are going on that we're not supposed to fixate on, just to see how it coordinates, how, you know, and also to perhaps catch a glimpse of something that maybe nobody else saw.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of that, and I think probably even more of that at the Super Bowl. One of the things that stands out too are, you know, the issues with player to coach communications as well, because that's all done through use of radio. So the coaches are communicating with, usually I think it's one individual player, and that's through some kind of radio frequency. And if you would think, well, you know, you have to understand what that frequency is. You want to make sure that frequency isn't jammed. You want to make sure that those communications are secure. So there are a lot of interesting security related issues that arise from a football game. That are really fascinating to watch and fascinating to dissect. And that was one of the things that I really enjoyed about being within the NFL. So, you know, not only did I get the opportunity to work on some of the tech and security issues relating to the installation of the new camera systems at all of the stadiums around the country, but also to work on some of the security issues that related to the use of IoT devices in stadium that could also interfere with those types of player-to-coach communications. So some really interesting stuff, but I think you bring up a lot of the cool tech issues here. And maybe we could have some of my colleagues from the NFL join the show one day and talk further about this.
Well, I would advise you, Alex, forget the game. The game, you know, is okay, but it's just a game. Watch the halftime show. It is brilliant. It is really amazing. You know, I saw it live. Then I watched it a second time, and it just resonated much better with Samuel Jackson and Kendrick Lamar and just the subversive message that they were sending. It really pissed Trump off. He left right after it. He couldn't handle it. But it is really incredible, and speaks, I think, more succinctly than almost anything else during that entire, what is it, 8-hour period of the game? I don't know.
I know. It's a long time. But that's a great point as well that you brought up, because, you know, there was this announcement that there was going to be some special guests and some special appearances at the halftime show. We had no idea that Samuel L. Jackson was there. No clue. We didn't see him on field. We had no idea. We were told that he was there afterwards. My wife and I said, that would have been nice to know that he was there. We literally had no clue.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't leave with that. You said you were in the same stadium as President Trump. What you should have said,
you're in the
same city as Samuel Jackson. That alone is impressive.
Yeah, that's true. That would be kind of cool. But it was an aspect of something that was kind of lost and mystified on us. But I think that you also bring up a good point with the halftime show. And this is something I think that I hope won't be lost on WBBI listeners and our regular listeners as well as part of the hacker community. is that the NFL is also something that is not only just tied up with Americana and American culture itself. And, you know, we very often think of it as associated with, you know, pickup trucks and drinking beer and things like that. But as an institution, they have been very much involved with social justice issues and players kneeling. Remember a couple of years ago, players kneeling to support Black Lives Matters and not participating in the national anthem.
No, I'm glad they cleared that up. What team is Colin Kaepernick playing for again?
Remember, this is my first football game. Uh-huh. What was it? The Chiefs, I guess, I was playing for, you know? Uh-huh. I have no idea.
Never mind, keep going.
Yeah, but that's part and parcel of what the NFL is in many ways, that they do take a lot of these controversial positions. But one of the news stories that came out just ahead of the Super Bowl was that they decided to remove this end racism statement on account of President Trump showing up for the Super Bowl.
Alex, it's over.
Unbelievable.
It's over. Racism has been eradicated.
Oh, it's ended.
It's done. So that's why they erased it.
So we didn't need it anymore.
This guy, George Orwell, wrote some nice pieces about this kind of a thing. Where basically when something no longer exists, you just erase it.
People don't associate the NFL with plantations anymore.
No. So they ended the end racism, and that's gone. Yeah. It's pretty unbelievable some of the things that you might not be aware of that are going on out there.
Yeah, that's true. So on the one hand, I think, you know, they have this history of being part of these social justice causes. On the other hand, they're one of these organizations that's afraid of getting on the bad side of Trump. Yet on a third hand, they allowed the halftime show that had this very positive woke message to go forward. So it's hard to figure out where they land.
Well,
very
you know,
much
they can't. I don't know why I'm echoing. Does somebody have a speaker on? It's a bit annoying. I don't know if they can control the message at halftime. They can control who performs at halftime. But once they've got the microphone, they can just go ahead and say what they want to say. Whereas, you know, a slogan painted onto the field, they can just get rid of that. And what you say is interesting because we're seeing that in the tech industry constantly, where companies have taken a stand, you know, for justice and fairness and equality. And now they're backing down because they're afraid of being on Trump's bad side. And I just want to ask them, what are you so afraid of? I mean, yeah, I know the guy's out of his mind and is doing all kinds of crazy things. But don't you want to be on the right side of that? It might hurt you in the short run. But history is ultimately what's going to judge where you were at this pivotal moment in history. So I don't know. We're seeing cowardice on many, many levels. The most significant being the most powerful levels, we're seeing cowardice, and I'm seeing courage from individuals more than anything else. Not from politicians, not from Democrats. No, from actual individual people standing up and refusing to be intimidated, refusing to back down, showing up to protest, to make their voices heard, and. This is just the beginning. We are going to need this for quite a while to come until something changes. And the only way it's going to change is if people get together, put aside their differences, and unite in what they all believe in.
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it. I think we've got a long way to go here, though, Emmanuel. I think there are a lot of organizations that really just don't want to be on the bad side of Trump because they know that he has promised essentially to weaponize the justice system, to use regulatory scrutiny and whatever other means are at his disposal to try to target his political enemies. This is what he promised. This is what people voted for.
Let's have him do that at, you know, 24 hours a day. Let's have him come after everybody. You know, and call his bluff. And if he's not bluffing, show the world what he's capable of and fight back instead of just taking it. Because, you know, this is not somebody you can reason with. You know, we saw it today. And this is kind of an interesting story that we don't see eye to eye on. But this whole congestion pricing thing in New York City, it's something that was instituted before Trump took power so that he wouldn't be able to stop it. And now apparently he's going to stop it anyway somehow, or at least he thinks he can. Listen to this tweet. Congestion pricing is dead. Manhattan and all of New York is saved. Long live the king. What the hell is going on here? This guy really thinks he is a king. No, it's not a joke. He really believes he is a king and can do anything. Now, this is a program, you know, like it or hate it, it was in place. It was legitimately put in place. It was working. We were seeing the effects of it. But even if you're opposed to it, to have somebody come in and do something like this, basically override what a state has decided to do, what a city has decided to do. That's before the mayor of the city became completely in Trump's pocket as well, but we won't get into that right now. But this is the kind of thing that we can see, you know, more and more of in the future if we just allow it to happen. We have to fight back on this and on everything that that we wind up being attacked with. If regardless of how you feel about this program, you should be incensed that somebody feels they can just steamroll in and negate what people who represent the area basically move forward with, you know, legitimately. I don't know. I just think there are many aspects to this. Yes, Alex.
Yeah, we definitely don't see eye to eye on the philosophy underlying the congestion charge, for sure. I will tell you, though, my tune has slightly changed for pragmatic reasons, because having gone in and out of the city either from JFK, Newark, or back and forth from Pennsylvania, I am noticing that there is a hell of a lot less traffic, and I can get in and out of the tunnels a lot faster. This is something I think that is a great benefit in many ways to a lot of commuters and people that have to deal with the infrastructure around the city.
But you ride a bike, and having less cars on the streets of Manhattan is a lot safer for you as a bike rider and, you know, a pedestrian as well.
Yes, the fewer cars, the better, as some of us would say. Yeah. And but with respect to Trump's dictatorial position on that congestion charge, though, I mean, this seems to be kind of anathema to his overall philosophy as well. I mean, one of the things is that he had campaigned on was is kind of these libertarian type of principles where, you know, the federal government wants to be very hands off with respect to certain things, and states should take over certain aspects, and they should be more autonomous, and the federal government shouldn't be sticking its nose in all this business. And in fact, they even have an entire crew called the Doge out there to stamp out waste and cut federal programs and cut jobs, fire people, terminate people across the board, whether they're in the Park Service, the Climate Corps, it doesn't matter. They're going around and cutting all these jobs. But then at the same time, Trump comes in there and from on high, quite literally, like some kind of monarch, starts dictating what New York can and cannot do. And so he doesn't seem to have any kind of consistent philosophy of governance here. He's just picking and choosing who he wants to target. New York being a liberal city with a liberal governor, he doesn't like it, so he's going to stick his nose in and try to curry favor with New Yorkers that wound up supporting him. And remember, he did get a lot more support this past election in New York and from the all of the boroughs. And so it's kind of mystifying to me why he thinks he can just come in and overrule local policy made by a state and local government. It's totally against what his overarching philosophy with respect to federal governance stands for.
Go ahead, Gayla.
Alex, I think you're giving him too much credit, because governance, business, personal life, you name it, his overarching directive is it's got to be good for me. And Trump Tower is three blocks below the top of the congestion zone. That's why he wants to kill the toll. He doesn't care about anybody else. He doesn't care about who voted for him in New York. He doesn't care about Eric Adams. He doesn't care about Kathy Hochul. He doesn't care about Yano Lieber. He cares that he lives three blocks below the zone.
Wait a minute. You're saying that this is about him not wanting to pay $9?
Uh-huh.
You think he pays $9?
The thing is, because of the tolling, this is something that he would at least get billed for. And I think there are probably penalties in place, as opposed to every other contractor that he has stiffed, every bill he hasn't paid in the last umpteen years.
Doesn't he arrive by helicopter?
So I don't think you can... I don't think you can park a helicopter at Trump Tower. I think
no, you park it downtown by our old studios on Wall Street, and then you take some kind of limo thing uptown, and you avoid the congestion charge that way.
At 57th Street, he'd be in the congestion zone.
Okay, look,
and
I think this
is petty.
He just wants to stick it to to the people he views as opponents, and he views all of New York City as his opponents, which is not that far off from reality. But this is something that, like Alex said, it's basically hypocritical that somebody is attacking states' rights, who supposedly stands up for states' rights. Same thing with the weaponization of the Justice Department, something that he has long accused Biden of doing without really pointing to evidence that can stick. Whereas in his case, it's very obvious what's going on because he's dictating it. He's saying this is going to happen, and then it happens. So he has weaponized the Department of Justice for sure. So there's so much hypocrisy here. We would waste a lot of time just outlining it all. I just think this is an important case to focus on because it shows how people can be manipulated. We're seeing corporations being manipulated. We're seeing the tech industry being manipulated. And individuals, too, are buying into a lot of these talking points that simply don't hold up to scrutiny. You know, one of the things that we keep hearing is that he was elected, which is true. He was elected, and he has a mandate from the people. Not so true, because while he may have won the popular vote, he won the popular vote by a smaller margin. Actually, I've got figures right here. Let's give you an example. When Obama was elected in 2008, he won the popular vote by 9,550,193 votes, nearly 10 million votes. All right. When Obama won the second time, it was nearly 5 million votes that he won by. When Trump won the first time, he actually lost by 2.8 million. We remember that. But when Biden won, he won by 7 million. So Trump in 2024 won by only 2 million. I mean, 2 million people is a lot, but it's the smallest number since, hang on, I gotta go back a ways, since Jimmy Carter, 1976. Smallest number. Not a mandate. Definitely not a mandate. You know what a mandate was? A mandate was when Reagan won in 1984, 16 million. That was a mandate.
I just had a non sequitur about like hacking and telephones, and just I want to implore people out there that we're going through the occurring, like what's going on, the details day to day. I just want everyone to know, as a background, the message here is this is a complete and utter crisis across the board, but specifically within the community of hackers. There are people who are using technology for bad. We know that. We're talking about it. We're trying to discuss the day-to-day news in that way. But I really, really want everyone to understand that this is paralyzing our community. People are, I think apoplectic is a word, people are beside themselves. They're upset. They're hurt. They're shutting down, closing off. They're not using communications. We have the best end-to-end encrypted technology. We have all kinds of resources. I know a lot of people work in and they're quite busy, and you need, as Alex was kind of championing, there is this security complex we feed to address yet more problems. But the underlying problems take activation, and it isn't just that private industry will make things ever more complex or secure and fix the ills we're all at the effect of. And I really think people have to communicate. People have to use their free time. I'm sorry. I know we're all busy with wage slavery. It's a thing here. And even fighting the monopolistic tendencies of capitalism, like, you might have a spare minute, and just if it's just boosting something on a social media platform, that's okay too. Do what you can, but do not shut down. We absolutely need every single hacker, poser, whatever you think you aren't, skitty, whatever derogatory thing they'll call you, whatever thing you aspire to be, please do something. Act. Whatever it is, don't shut down. Talk to people who don't understand the implications of technology. I'm not scared. This is not a time to be fearful. It is a time to be absolutely as forceful as possible. And we are really missing talking about, oh, this, then, that, and why this, and oh, gosh, I'm shocked that he's doing it. How does he think this? It's all bluff if we don't do it, that we're substantiating, if we don't do anything, if we don't stand up to it. And I'm taking time here. I know, E, you have other things to get to. There's other people on the show that want to comment. We'll get calls or have time after the show. But here we are on the greatest radio station in the middle of the commercial spectrum, talking about the implications of this specifically with technology and hacking and computers. And they have their teams, the Doge team, all these disciples, they have them lined up, and they understand technology too. We're not at this like digital divide where like the cops don't get security or the government's slow, they're running Windows 98. No, the world has changed. They have Palantir is in their back pocket, right? Forecasting what they'll oppress next. Who knows? I mean, who knows how they're using it, but they have all the money, tons of resources, now the entirety of the government. And we are, you know, clocking in and going home, and supposedly, as much as they would have it, we're crying into our miso or whatever. But the point of our show here is to inspire and to activate people. Please get engaged. Please do something. If you don't have a hacker crew, make one. Make 10, okay? Make shell hacker groups. Whatever you have to do. But this is absolutely an affront to the existence of everything you might know and everything your children might think could be. And I really don't want us to waste any more time obsessing over our surprise at people acting awful. I could go on. I'm going to stop. But I took that time because I want people to know we're not getting enough from hackers. People, please write. Please talk. Please communicate. Call the show. Call us. Call a friend. Call out into the alleyway. Whatever you have to do, do something. Because it's not going to happen if we all just cross our arms and wonder and try to like pick our jaws up. It's not surprising. Half of us, a lot of us predicted this. And it's about what are we going to do? What are we doing? How are we supporting the leadership in understanding what to do? What we want them to do? And I cannot tell you, like, the entirety of the phone system got hacked a couple months ago. Is anybody telling us anything about that? Is there any explanation from those private entities who take our money? Have they said anything about what's going to happen, what they're going to do, is other than guarantees and like $20 rebates or something? Like, there are crazy important issues out there, and we have got to stop being distracted. I'm going to shut up now, but I'm taking this time because I'm really, really looking for a lot more, especially out of hackers. And I know we have our little differences, we have our little cliques and infights and stuff. This is not the time for any of that.
Wow. Thank you for saying all of that. And I have to agree with just about everything you said, and hope that people do start being counted. And there are people who are being counted already, but don't count on the so-called leadership to do that, because I don't know, they're timid. They look towards the next election. They don't really want to put their necks on the line, especially if they don't feel that enough people are behind them. That's why it's so important for the people to speak and to either say something similar or say something different, but be counted. And don't let this bit of history just pass you by. Yeah, it's super relevant. I know there are people who think it's not relevant to our subject matter. It absolutely is. It's relevant to every facet of our society. You have to get involved, or at least be aware and have conversations and listen, because everything is at stake here. You know, Ukraine alone, what has happened in the past couple of days. Now they're the enemy, apparently. Yeah, they're our enemy. They may not have said those words, but they are being treated as the enemy. Trump called Zelensky a dictator today while cozying up to Putin. Putin, of all people. It's disgusting and fodder for a lot of humor as well, but there are serious consequences to this kind of thing. And you might not see them now. You might not see how it affects you. But when economies start to crash, when military alliances change, when the things that you took for granted are no longer there, you'll know it then. But will there be any way of doing something about it at that point? This is the time to get involved. Also, I would be remiss if I didn't remind people that we're in the middle of a fund drive here at WBAI. And yeah, I see a lot of eyes rolling, not here, but, you know, out there in listener land. I know, but it's, look, do you think we can say these kinds of things on a station where we play commercials? Do you think that? You know, if you turn around to any station surrounding us anywhere, you won't find this kind of thing. You'll find the same music. You'll find the same commercials. You'll find the same mainstream crap. And that's what pays their bills. But it doesn't do anything for their level of thinking, their level of awareness, their level of caring. And that's what we count on our listeners for, is that level of caring. So please be a BAI buddy. A WBAI buddy is somebody who pays a small amount every month and helps support the station. You can go to the website buddy.wbai.org. Or if you want to sign up immediately, you can call 1-833-WBAI-NYC, 1-833-WBAI-NYC. Maybe somebody can translate that into numbers, because some people don't have letters on their phones, and I don't have a phone, so I can't do that. But you can use a credit card or a debit card if you wish. And if no one answers, you can leave a voicemail with your with your name and a number for a callback. Or you can mail a check or money order to WBAI, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. But the important thing is to pledge what you can to keep this station going, because, you know, there have been so many times when we have been attacked, when we have been taken down by one faction or another. But I think we all see now the importance, how absolutely vital it is to have a station like WBAI on the air, because you can reach people through websites, sure, but you have to look for the website to find it. It's not the same thing. I guarantee you there are people right now driving in New York City. Hey, what's going on? Be careful, though. Listening to the radio. Maybe your taxi driver is listening to the radio. You know what? Give him an extra chip because I said that. Yeah. But there are people who tune to the radio and they don't know what it is that they found. They just find it by accident. It happens to me every day. You know, I turn on the radio, turn to different stations, and I hear things that I never would have imagined. Music I've never heard before, opinions, perspectives. That's the magic of radio. That's what you're keeping alive by pledging to WBAI. And we've been doing this since 1960. Somehow we've managed to do it without airing a single commercial in all that time. I say somehow, but it's really because of you, because of listeners like you, listeners like your parents, listeners like your grandparents. It goes back that far. So we absolutely need listeners to survive. We can't survive on corporate donations. We can't survive on government grants. We can't survive on commercials. We just won't do that. So please show your support, buddy.wbai.org, or call 1-833-WBAI-NYC. Did anybody translate that?
92446.
You should have written it down. I'll read the first part. You read the rest.
92.
It's WBAI-NYC. So, okay,
1-833-922-4692.
There you go. Let's write that down and keep it so we don't have to go through this every time. All right, great.
Oh, yeah, I forgot the two.
You know what? We're running out of time rapidly, but we do have to focus on something that happened since our last show. Doge got hacked. Yeah, did you think this was going to take a long time? Of course Doge got hacked. If there are hackers out there, they are going to hack something, and Doge is the number one screaming target of all of them. Basically, they posted classified intelligence data on their new website before the hack hit the platform. That's according to Huffington Post, who cites one federal intelligence employee, probably an intelligent employee as well. The Doge.gov, that's Doge.gov, by the way. Their website was reportedly hacked with a person allegedly posting a message saying these quote-unquote experts left their database open. As per the Huffington Post report, Musk's team posted information about the size and staff of a U.S. intelligence agency. This comes after President Trump signed an executive order allowing Doge access to access key details about federal agencies. The report further added that a tiny print at the bottom of the Doge website said its database excludes information from intelligence agencies. However, an easy search shows that Doge's database provides details on the National Reconnaissance Office, the federal agency that designs, builds, and maintains U.S. intelligence satellites. The NRO's budgets and headcounts are classified. Doge just posted secret NOFORN, N-O-F-O-R-N, info, on their website about intelligence community headcount. So currently people are scrambling to check if their info has been accessed. That's according to one defense intelligence agency. They don't have names, so we'll never find out who they are. As per the outlet, a spokesperson for the NRO did not clearly respond to a question, instead diverting it to Doge. We defer to the Department of Government Efficiency for comment on the release of information posted on Doge.gov. An aide to a senator, who also, the aide doesn't want to be named and the senator doesn't want to be named, they work on intelligence-related matters, basically said that Doge sharing information is absolutely a problem under the current intelligence standards. Folks, we are living through security breaches of a sort that I don't think we could have even imagined in fiction. It's happening every day. We have unelected people rummaging through databases. They have now been given access to IRS tax records for all of us. They have access to Social Security records for all of us. And we don't even know the extent of it. And we probably won't for a very long time, if at all. And this is something to be outraged at. Absolutely outraged at. We need to be as loud and as vocal and as annoying as we possibly can be. And I know I'm speaking to the right people for this, because we can do all of that. Yes, Alex.
I was unaware of these disclosures with respect to the NRO. The NRO is a quite a secretive organization, part of the intelligence community, a joint endeavor between CIA and the Air Force. And believe it or not, I've been there a couple of times inside the NRO. Even the location of the NRO is, I believe, still classified. But I will tell you this, that when you go inside the NRO, it feels like what the CIA looks like on TV. It is actually that cool. It's that neat. And the technology at issue and the satellites that you're, well, all of the different data relating to the satellites that they own and operate is really just kind of fascinating. It was very, very cool place. So, but it's also just so obvious that it's part of the intelligence community that making these types of disclosures is just beyond mystifying to me.
Well, not if you don't care. Not if you feel that you're the richest person on earth and can do whatever they damn well please. And right now, they can. All right, let's go to some listener mail. OTH@2600.com is our email address. You can write in, and maybe we'll read your letter on the air. Dear Off the Hook, I'm tired of hearing about the guardrails of democracy. They failed. The ship of state has been heading for the fascist iceberg since January 6th. Ray Charles could have seen this outcome. There are opportunities to prevent the tangerine tyrant from once again staining the White House, but they were not vigorously pursued, even though alarms and lights were flashing red since January 6th. And now we're sinking. Water is pouring in, and the outcome is becoming clearer with each passing hour. I am 77 and a great-grandfather who fears for my children's future. What a horrible legacy. Gil Scott Heron's Winter in America resounds, and I stream WBAI from Baltimore, Maryland. Signed, GKS. And GKS, thank you for that heartfelt letter. And with people like you, the future gets a little brighter. And we need to not give up. We need to not be cowed into submission. We need to speak out whenever we can. And this place, WBAI, is one way of doing that. You know, and that's why I'm so grateful that it's here. So thank you for your letter. Here's another one. Hi, everyone. Thank you for decades of awesomeness. Wow. In reference to Alex speaking on the deterioration of democracy in America, I would suggest reading How Civil Wars Start and How to Stop Them by Barbara F. Walter. She writes about how democracies are weakened and turned towards more authoritarian forms of government by turning into an anocracy. Yes, anocracies have some semblance of democracy, but their institutions are weakened by, dare I say it, what many of the things Trump and his ilk are pushing to change. It's worth a read in order to be able to see what is happening now in the U.S. That's How Civil Wars Start and How to Stop Them by Barbara Walter. Not Barbara Walters, Barbara Walter. Thanks for everything. Signed, Chip. Chip, thank you for that that pointer, and we will certainly check that out. Anocracies, huh? That's... You perked up at that, Kyle.
Yeah, I read a little bit. I read the article from that. They sent a link. There's a great read on Wikipedia about that. But it is a great, I guess, characterization, way to refer to this impending era, I guess.
Yeah. Well, we're pretty much in the middle of the impending. Oh, yes, Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, I think sum up what a lot of us have been saying on this program tonight and other nights, it's vital more than ever that you get out there and you talk with people, talk about what's going on out there, talk about what's important, and whether that's talking, with people online, in person is even more vital, people in your neighborhood, people in your area, people in your circles of friends, colleagues, just people you deal with. Talk about this, because it is very easy for anybody who is terrified by what's going on to feel entirely alone in all of it. And it is vital to remember that, no, you are not alone. There are lots of others like you. There are lots of others who can help you deal with the all sort of general mishmash of everything right now, and possibly get together some efforts to fight it. So, yeah, go out there, talk with folks.
Yeah, don't be too judgy as far as who you're talking to, because you'll find people who disagree with you on some things but agree with you on the important things. And this is not the time to be super selective. The important thing is, do we care about the future of the country? Do we care about democracy? If so, then we can work together. All right, we have time for one more letter. Good afternoon. I meant to send this much earlier in the week rather than close to your next airing. In fact, it came in this evening or late this afternoon. In your latest episode of Off the Hook, you discuss the FCC's being turned against people, truth on TV or radio, with a CBS station in particular being targeted. I would like to call your attention to something Trump said in his inauguration speech, which the first one, he gave several that day. After years and years of illegal and unconstitutional federal efforts to restrict free expression, I will also sign an executive order to immediately stop all government censorship and bring back free speech in America. Never again will the immense power of the state be weaponized to persecute political opponents, something I know something about. Yeah. I originally was going to quip that if that's the case, WBAI could get away with re-airing without any omissions during regular daytime hours, George Carlin's famous slash infamous 7 Dirty Words speech. But what is really happening is much more serious than not allowing that. Also, thank you for that letter. Also, the hypocrisy here is incredible because what has happened since then is exactly the opposite of what Trump has pledged. He has clamped down on media outlets that even the slightest way have done something to upset him. I mean, he has banned the Associated Press from press briefings in the White House because they won't say Gulf of America. They continue to say Gulf of Mexico, which is the legitimate name. And for that, they are banned. That's, you know, there are many, many other examples involving broadcast entities and people who basically are fact-checking becoming enemies of the state.
These points are great. I would encourage people that this is itself a medium that requires us to adhere to certain things. It actually makes us better at making our points, better at discourse in general, and it is stifling sometimes. We'd love to be able to be unbridled, and we can't sit through a lot of things where you have to, you know, be sort of socially careful. This avenue, this method does help, but we're also energized by your support. So please say something nice to a hacker if you can.
Yes.
So that places like this and people like us are energized and around.
And call 833-WBAI-NYC or go to buddy.wbai.org. Pledge whatever you can afford. And we will continue the conversation on Overtime, YouTube, channel 2600, or go to the link on top of the 2600.com webpage. You're not alone. We'll be back next week. Good night. Stay strong.
Well, you wonder why I always dress in black. Why you never see bright colors on my back. And why does my appearance seem to have a somber tone? Well, there's a reason for the things that I have on. I wear the black for the poor and the beaten down. Living in the hopeless, hungry side of town. I wear it for the prisoner who has long paid for his crime, but is there because he's a victim of the times. I wear the black for those who've never read or listened to the words that Jesus said about the road to happiness through love and charity. Why, you'd think he's talking straight to you and me. Well, we're doing mighty fine, I do suppose, in our streak of lightning cars and fancy clothes. But just so we're reminded of the ones who are held back, up front there ought to be a man in black. I wear it for the sick and lonely old, for the reckless ones whose bad trip left them cold. I wear the black in mourning for the lives that could have been. Each week we lose 100 fine young men. And I wear it for the thousands who have died, believing that the Lord was on their side. I wear it for another 100,000 who have died, believing that we all were on. I know, and things need changing everywhere you go. But till we start to make a move to make a few things right, you'll never see me wear a suit of white. Oh, I'd love to wear a rainbow every day and tell the world that everything's okay. But I'll try to carry off a little darkness on my back till things are brighter. I'm